Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and for today's episode, we turn to the knock-on effects Brexit might have on British football. I know, audible gasps of terror are heard around the nation. But on a serious note, my co-host Tim Hemming chatted to Mark Webber, who's a journalist for the FC Business magazine, to find out how everything from players to merchandise and fans' ability to travel abroad for games could be affected. So if you're a bit of a football fan, this is one for you. For other Brexit-related news, which usually doesn't have much to do with football, but which I think you still might find quite interesting, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you really like the show, do give us a quick rate and review because it helps people find out about us, which is always a good thing, right? You can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
We've got Mark Webber now with us, who's a feature writer at FC Business magazine. Mark, want to talk football and Brexit. Oscar, prime of his career, he's gone to China to earn £350,000 a week.
Yep.
Does Brexit sound the death knell for the Premier League?
I think it's a mix of renewed interest in football in China and the money that's floating around the Chinese part of the business, and their desire to get the world's best players over there, and an element of Brexit. I think Karen Brady, when the campaign was going on around the referendum, said that Brexit would be the worst things that could have happened to the Premier League. And Richard Scudamore was also part of the Remain campaign in so much as saying that the Premier League really needed to stay within a single European market because it raises all sorts of issues about the calibre of players that you can drag into this country after we leave the EU because of the work permits that will be needed. One thing is for sure, whatever happens with any sort of single market or free trade market agreement we may come up with the EU after we leave the EU, there will be more paperwork for football clubs, big and small, because they will have more forms to fill in because there were forms that they didn't have to fill in when we were part of the single European market.
Yes, that's going to be the long-term effect. In the short term, we've obviously got a weakened pound with the uncertainty. We've got the likes of Jovinho, Papi Cisse, Demba Ba, all plying their trade now in China. Lots of rumours about other players. Do you think that actually has an impact now?
Yeah, I think the currency has been an element and will continue to be an element of the fallout of the referendum. You know, clubs in this country will fret about how much they're paying for players now because of the weakening of the pound. And also the other way around, European clubs will start to ask the value of doing any sort of trade with British clubs as a result of the way that goes. Obviously, when a currency fluctuates, there are always winners and losers. But I certainly think that the currency element of what's happened since we had the referendum has affected the bottom line of many clubs. And the other day, Manchester United released their results to the New York Stock Exchange. And there was a heck of a currency fluctuation in what they were reporting in dollars versus pounds.
OK. How vital is the Premier League to the British economy?
Oh, it's a huge asset, even on a soft level. I mean, in terms of football, nobody's ever quantified this, but we are the Premier League and football as an industry is one of the biggest exporters and importers of trade in the United Kingdom. You will go to, I've been to many British government trade events in sport around the world, and the first thing that's pulled out is the Premier League trophy, and the first people that are pulled out to speak are representatives from the Premier League. Obviously, the Premier League has desires to enhance their awareness and the interest in the league and the clubs, not only across Europe, but globally, and they are often cited and involved in trade missions across Britain. It's an absolute asset to our country to do trade abroad. So, let's focus on the soft side of it as much as how much money it will bring into the world's economy. And you know, you even have to look at things like how much money international TV companies in America and China now are paying for the rights to show the English Premier League, which has gone up dramatically over the past 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, and that's no sign of slacking off at the moment.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think increasingly the question is how much more money can they get out of global deals as global interest continues in the Premier League. We could get to a stage where there may be a tipping point. A lot of people in Britain are concerned about the amount of money that Sky and BT pay for the domestic TV rights. There has actually been a fall in the amount of people watching football on Sky and BT this year, and I think there's very much a feeling for all the member clubs in the Premier League and the Premier League itself, the money is now abroad. And they're not the only league to think that way. La Liga are thinking that way and investing heavily in India and China as well. So they know that actually the future relies in the export of the product rather than more than the import.
Yeah, a few years ago, I think we cast our mind back. I remember Scudamore mentioning the notion of having a 39th game played somewhere. Asia seemed a kind of a bizarre concept at the time and got sort of roundly panned in the media. But I guess now with the rise of the Chinese Super League, this might be something that could be on the table once more, perhaps.
Well, he's looking at the NFL now in America, and the NFL now have how many games in London? 3 games in London a season.
And looking to expand, yeah.
Exactly. Who knows, they're not going to play one in China soon. The MLB baseball in America has played games in Sydney in Australia, and he's probably looking now, the Premier League are probably looking at that and thinking, why can't we do it? Why couldn't it be our turn? Why couldn't we have a regular season game away from the UK? And I think they're probably waiting for the driver of those TV revenues. Once the TV revenues abroad get pretty close to the TV revenue coming in from Britain, that's when the piper calling the tune changes his nationality and it becomes the Americans and the Chinese saying, hey, hold on, we're paying a lot of money for this. You need to play on our time zones. You need to play in our domains. And I have said recently, and people have felt a bit uneasy when I say this, I've always said that recently the English Premier League is English only in name, and it just so happens to be a world league located in England. And I think that is how you need to look at the Premier League now. And when things like Brexit happen, that stymies that growth, certainly in Europe or countries that work with Europe a lot.
Yeah, and I think when they have played friendly matches abroad, you think of pre-season games in America, am I right in thinking that they fill out the stadium?
Oh, absolutely, and there have been many tours as well to China recently as well. Of course, one game was cancelled between Manchester United and Manchester City in the Bird's Nest, but they'll be back in China again. And China has been absolutely targeted by the British clubs operating in the Premier League, the English Premier League, as places they need to have places of people and development. And India is another one as well. Everything is absolutely geared now on how you can expand interest and revenue from those markets, because there is a feeling that the British market is saturated. They can't get any more money out of British football fans and the British football system.
Now, we all talk Premier League, Premier League, Premier League, but actually propping all this up, there is a football league which probably has through the gates as many fans turn up to watch the football, the three divisions of the Football League on the weekends in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, there's 72 clubs in the English Football League. And, you know, let's talk about Scottish football and Welsh football here. And what we're seeing, interestingly, in those organisations is a rise in the number of people physically turning up to games and probably turning off their TVs and getting back into football grounds. But, you know, coming back to the issue of Brexit, let's not think that Brexit is just a problem for the richest 20 clubs in England. You know, the paperwork that will increase will be forced just as much on Accrington Stanley as it will be on Arsenal. If Accrington Stanley wants to bring in a player from Europe, that paperwork is now going to increase. Now, Vote Leave during the campaign said what it does, of course, is levels the playing field out. We could look at bringing more Brazilian players in and the paperwork will get easier. Well, in essence, the paperwork's just getting harder on the European side, not necessarily easier on everywhere else. And I think all football clubs, whatever their size, are very much looking at whatever trade deals Britain does in the near and far future and the element of free movement and the restriction of work permits as being a big thing for them in the future and what they would need out of any sort of future trade deals post-Brexit.
Have there been any noises on that so far from Theresa May's government?
No, not at all. I think we all know we're in very early stages of even trying to get out of the EU, let alone the future trade deals we might do. And I think it's all wrapped up in general conversations then about, you know, what sort of freedom of movement do we have with people with country X or country Y. I don't think they have even thought about the effect on the Premier League or any of football in relation to the movement of European players in and out of England and how that might be affected. But I can guarantee you that this is being thought about quite heavily on the top tables of the Premier League and the Football League. And come the time those discussions are being had, there will be lobbying from the football bodies in this country to ensure that it is as easy as it can be to attract the best talent in the world into our football clubs.
Mm, football in some ways is like religion to people. Probably the poorer paid in society pay a sort of an abnormal large percentage of their disposable income, probably goes on tickets for the family. They, you know, they have to go week in, week out. Are we seeing that pattern change at all, or are people still devoted to their local club?
I think there is a change in the desire for football knowledge. I think 5 years ago in Britain, people would have been very wedded to the team they support. Now, you know, that team could be hundreds of miles away from them. You know, people in Surrey supporting Manchester United, that's always been there. But they're still very wedded to that team. Increasingly, I think the younger generation are more interested in football full stop. And yes, they'll have their team, like Arsenal or the Man United, and they might even have the local team, like Huddersfield or Sutton United. But they are also scanning for every bit of information possible about football generally. And they are very clued up on what other clubs are doing and what's happening in other leagues. I think there's definitely a rising awareness of the state of football generally in the UK amongst the new generation. And I also say there's also a rising awareness, and that awareness is largely driven not by, in many cases, physically turning up to a game, but actually what the ratings of that player is on Football Manager or esports games like that.
Yeah, so it becomes, I suppose, the borders become less important. It's not the football through the gates anymore. It's what people are tuning into on TV and, like you say, playing FIFA or you know, Football Manager games.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the current UK broadcaster, Sky and BT, are very worried about the fact that numbers are decreasing in viewership. They're very conscious of the fact that the average age of a viewer on Sky Sports now is 40-year-old and male, which is the average age of a season ticket holder for a football, physical football game, whereas, of course, the average age user and demographic for an esports equivalent like FIFA or Football Manager is knocking on between 18 and 23, 25 possibly, and certainly the more affluent scale of those young people. And that's where the money is, and that's where the brands want to go. So, you know, football faces not only a challenge of Brexit, but a football faces a challenge of where's its next generation of fans coming from and how they engage with the FIFA users of today to either bring them to be bums on seats in stadia in years to come or even make money out of them in that electronic domain.
Yeah, that electronic domain is a rising phenomenon, isn't it? You've got professional gamers out there now making a good living from playing one another on computer games. It seems almost absurd, I suppose, what it would be if you went back 10 years, but that's a truth these days.
Absolutely. Esports is a growing business. And esports, remember, doesn't just cover football games. It can cover games like Call of Duty, war games, fighting games. But, they, you know, be aware, football clubs are very clued up into what's going on here. I mean, for example, there are about four or five Premier League sides in England who have hired their own esports player who represents the team, Manchester City in one example, in esports competitions wearing a Manchester City shirt. Even the new Saints of Wales, which is like obviously the league leaders in the Welsh Premier League, they have an esports player. You know, if it's going down that low, then people realise that they have to get on board that bus. And yeah, there's a lot of talk in the business development arms of football clubs about how they get into that game.
What are the other effects of Brexit going to be on football as a whole? What about fans travelling abroad? It's obviously going to get a little bit more expensive in the short term with the depreciating pound. But are there other aspects that you can see that we haven't thought about?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about changing the rules around freedom of movement, obviously, if your team's playing in Europe at the Europa League or Champions League level, you might have to go and apply for a visa to go and enter one of these countries to watch your game, your team play on a Thursday or a Tuesday. That is an absolute certainty if we lose the freedom of movement aspect around Europe. There's also an aspect of the profit and loss of the football clubs. So, you know, these clubs obviously sell shirts and sell merchandise around the world, including Europe. There will be no free trade anymore between EU member states. So British football clubs like Manchester United selling a shirt in a Paris superstore, that will accrue a sales tax, and that will be less money going into the pockets of Manchester United. So, yeah, it has a spider effect across the whole of the industry, much like any other industry, of course. There are things that perhaps you don't think about, even things like health and safety legislation, which, of course, everybody takes the mickey out of in relation to the EU, that it's just burdened Britain with health and safety legislation. But obviously, those laws that are enshrined from EU on health and safety issues will either have to be adopted back into British law or scrapped completely. And that will leave health and safety officials in football clubs not knowing where they stand for a while.
That could be a very interesting point. Do you think it will spark up the debate about safe standing areas at higher level games again?
Well, I don't think it makes it easier to introduce safe standing. In fact, safe standing is, if you like, being blocked by legislation which has been generated in the House of Commons and under British jurisdiction. Of course, there are many clubs in continental Europe, EU member clubs, which have no problem with safe standing and have brought it in. It is purely about English law. I don't know whether Brexit is going to make safe standing come any quicker. I think, to be honest with you, there are bigger things and bigger demands internally that will make that happen if it happens. Of course, the big problem with safe standing, or the big issue with safe standing, is those people who've got real concerns about its safety. And many of them, of course, are, it would be fair to say, involved in the Hillsborough campaign, and obviously went through a massive tragedy and have definitely some right evidence and some right emotions about the safety of people in football grounds.
Absolutely. And just finally, I was one guy who potentially might be happy with Brexit, and maybe a few less foreigners in the Premier League, could be Gareth Southgate, the England manager.
Well, yeah, I was just actually watching an interview with Greg Dyke, who said that, you know, I mean, Greg Dyke actually, I think, if I'm right, was on the Remain side of the fence during the EU debate. But of course, when he was FA chairman, he was saying, you know, if this anything that restricts the amount of foreign players in our English Premier League and allows the English talent to come through is brilliant. So one way, he's probably happy about Brexit. He was probably happy about Brexit. Yes, absolutely. It will make it harder, and there will be more paperwork to get a European player through the door. And if that European player isn't playing in a top 10 league and isn't playing at the top level of a top 10 league, there will be more visas to sign and there will be more paperwork to sign. So in that essence, English clubs may then go, we can't be bothered with this. This is costing us an arm and a leg. We're wasting a lot of lawyers' fees. We're wasting a lot of time. Let's go for that player in the Championship. The question is then whether you want to balance, bearing in mind what I said about the Premier League being a global league, which so happens to be in England, how far do you take that balance then of a mix of players from Europe and England and Africa and Brussels and Brazil, wherever they come from? You know, does the erroneous paperwork that has been caused by Brexit make it harder for you to have a really strong English Premier League?
Yeah, so like the Premier League and like Brexit, the winners and losers are going to continue for a bit yet.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.